When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
A strange spiraling white light was spotted in the early morning sky over Sydney, with even skeptical witnesses wondering if it was a UFO.
They were last seen on the beach with a tall man, and that's the best description police have ever had of him.
More than 17 years after Harold Holt disappeared into raging surf at Cheviot Beach, his widow has finally revealed his last romantic words.
Gawky, terrifying, mesmerising. That's the way a number of Australians have described their alleged encounter with the Yowie.
It's time for the Weird Crap in Australia podcast.
Welcome to the Weird Crap in Australia podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Soul. Joining me for another episode of The Strange, The Macabre, and sometimes the oddly historical, is Holly Soul.
We had this little discussion like 20 minutes ago. We're a historical podcast that covers conspiracies. We're no longer a conspiracy podcast. I have made my way.
I'm not sure what we are anymore. I consider us a celebration of Australiana. An exploitation, if you will, of exploitation. Australia. Exploiting exploitation to the international masses.
Exploitation.
Why not? I should probably stop rambling so much. I've been told by one or two people that our intros are too long. So we'll shorten that up a little bit for you guys. Episode 175. This is part two of The Governors. Take it away, Holly.
The Governor brothers and Jack Underwood had fled by the time John Mowbray arrived at the house. Only Bert, George, and the two youngest children, who'd slept through the commotion in the kitchen at the back of the house, remained unscathed.
Really is true what they say. Some people can sleep through death.
I could. I have.
You probably could, yes.
I think I slept through a nosebleed the other day, actually.
Ooh.
Percy and Hilda Mowbray and Ellen Kurtz were dead. Grace Mowbray lasted 2 days before she died of her wounds. Sarah Mowbray lasted four. Elsie Clark survived but was permanently deafened by the blows rained on her head. The governors knew they were in a desperate situation as they ran back to camp and quickly packed. Even those not part of the kill squad, Peter Governor and Jack Porter, sensed the danger that they were now proxied to and chose to run rather than face it. Near sunrise, Jimmy killed his nephew's dog to stop it barking and thereby giving their location away.
Oh man, like, they always kill the dog. They always kill the dog. Everyone kills the dog. Stop killing people's dogs, Jesus.
Jimmy directed Ethel to take Sydney to Dubbo while he and the men took an alternate route. Is it route or route?
Either or.
Okay, well, I say route.
You can say I'm taking this route or you can say I'm taking this round. Both are correct pronunciations.
Good, because I'm glad I finally got one right.
Because to root for someone in America is very different than to root someone in Australia.
To root for someone in Australia.
Well, there's an exchange of money that's usually involved there.
Ethel walked through
Sorry, just trying to infuse a little bit of humor and comedy every now and again. Because this story is horrifying.
It is horrifying. Ethel walked through the bush until she found the road to Dubbo and was quickly intercepted by armed men riding to Gilgandra soon after. She was returned to the Breelong property and locked in a room at the inn. Jack Porter and Peter Governor also separated and were found hiding in the bush on July 23rd, 12 miles southeast of Breelong. They were initially taken to the Mendorian lockup, but were soon united with Ethel as prisoners of the estate. I almost said Mandalorian. That's what kind of brain I'm in right now. The Mandalorian lockup. Well, that's a mix of universes. An inquest was held over the events of July 23 and 24 at the Mowbray residence. Surviving members of the family, as well as Ethel Governor and Jack Porter, gave evidence. Depositions were also taken from Sarah Mowbray, who died during the second day of the inquest. The jury returned a verdict of willful murder against Jivvy Governor, Joe Governor, Jack Underwood, Jackie Porter, and Ethel Governor. Porter and Ethel Governor were then placed under arrest and locked up at the Gilgandra police station. Joe and Jimmy Governor, Jack Underwood, kept evading their pursuers, making their way through the bush and travelling southeast until they reached Granby Station. They narrowly avoided a hunty party while there. Near Mandoran, they ran across Mr. Ison, who had yet to hear of the murders. The man was a friend of Jimmy's, and so was happy to share rations before the men went their own separate ways.
You would assume that any associations like this one that just occurred with one of their old friends, is that going to... It's essentially going to be established that a lot of people in close proximity to these guys are going to be arrested, are going to be questioned. Would that guy be questioned just for sharing rations?
Quite possibly, but I think he would be released very quickly because at that point it's been, what, 6-7 hours since the murders? There's no way he would have heard of them by now.
Mm. But it seems to me we're still in the era of kind of like a lawless sort of mob justice.
Well, you nab them now, and that way if they're guilty, you've got them, but if they're innocent, you can let them go. Mm. You don't have to try and then hunt them through the fucking bush for 6 months.
True, absolutely.
The next day, William Davidson, a sleeper cutter, spotted the men on Dilga Station. He fired shots at the men and they escaped into the bush. A swag dropped at the scene was found to contain the waddy and the tomahawk, both still bloodstained. Jack Underwood fell behind or separated from the Governor brothers while he was running. Now, he had a massive limp, if you remember from the last episode. He was captured on July 24 when he was called in at William Shaw's Inn near Leadville. He called himself Charlie Brown and begged for some food.
Okay, so that's what's the significance of the name of Charlie Brown?
I'm pretty sure it's just two common names put together, like John Smith.
Right, so it's just a very odd coincidence that happens to be a very common name.
Well, Brown is common, and then Charlie, there were a lot of King Charles's.
True. That makes actually, when you put it to me like that, it does make sense. Of course, I'm alluding to the very popular
Peanuts
character from Peanuts called Charlie Brown.
I think that's another reason why his name was Charlie Brown, just because it was so common.
Yeah, because he was quite a
normal, average kind of person.
Yeah, deeply depressed individual as well, if I remember. And I think Charles Schulz, who created the characters, was also deeply depressed.
Quite possibly. You tend to put a lot into your characters. While Underwood was being fed, Shaw's wife went for a group of the armed men searching for the Brelon killers. Underwood was taken to the lockup at Leadville. On July 26, he was taken by coach to the jail at Mudgee. He was held in the hope that the governors would soon be found and they'd only need to hold one trial. However, on August 18, they realised that this was a pointless endeavour and he was sent to Dubbo, then on to Gilgandra to stand before Gilgandra Police Court. He stood trial for the murder of Percy Malby on the 2nd of October 1900 before Judge G.B. Simpson. In exchange for testimony, charges against Ethel Governor and Jack Porter were dropped. Ethel gave evidence at the trial, but Jackie Porter and the boy Peter were withdrawn as witnesses, as it was decided that they did not actually understand the concept of an oath.
Okay, look, we need you to swear on this Bible that you will tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God. Okay, what's a Bible? All right. Okay, so our Creator, God, gave us this book in order to impart his wisdom to us so we can lead rich and full lives. We need you to declare an oath on this book that you are going to tell the truth. Okay. What's a God? And I imagine it just continued on like that for a good like hour and a half until they finally got up when they got to the point where like, okay, we understand the concept of God and your monolithic theism. We understand that now.
Would I give a shit about what I'm swearing on this book?
I was like, now, what's an oath? It's like at that point, you're like, fuck this shit.
After an hour of deliberation, the jury declared Jack Underwood guilty at 6:45 p.m. and he was sentenced to death. I'll go into when he was hanged later on because it becomes part of a story. It's in the notes, but I'll skip it this time.
Hey, man, I didn't write the notes.
I know,
I only clean them up. You're the one who structures the episodes.
Sometimes there's not really a structure.
I almost like how you were like, I don't want to read that key piece of information that I've written down, so what I'm going to do is present it anyway, but say, don't worry, it will come around later.
Just remember this bit. After separating from Jack Underwood, the Governor brothers stole a grey horse and fled, being spotted in Slapdash Creek.
There we go on Slapdash Fast at Slapdash Creek.
It actually does probably make sense. It's probably why it was named that creek.
And putting things together, you do it in a haphazard slapdash way.
Mm-hmm.
Slapdash.
Which makes me wonder whether it was a straight creek, in which point you could slapdash run your way down it, or whether it was just so twisty and windy that it looked like you just kind of put it together higgledy-piggledy.
Kind of sounds like a mobile phone organization, you know. Join us now for our slapdash plan. Get 30 minutes free every month.
You don't really want a slapdash plan because you don't know where you're actually going to get coverage. And they might bill you this month. They might bill you next month. Who knows?
Might bill you double. Might bill you triple. Slapdash. The poor man's phone company. Because you'll be poor after signing up with us.
No, that's Telstra.
Pew, pew. Take that, Telstra.
They continued on until they reached the home of Alexander McKay in Sprotsman's Hollow.
No, let's just keep going.
Australia makes weird words, we know this. McKay was pruning a fig tree when the men approached, and he was hit on the top of the head with a blow from the tomahawk. Mary McKay ran for the house, but was stuck on the temple with a stick. She got inside, but the governors broke into the house. They stole clothes and money before leaving with a horse and saddle. The women of the house carried Alexander McKay into the house, where he soon died.
Again, these are very brutal crimes. It's deliberate, it's quick, and it's, you know, there is this like sense of overpowering rage that's just been exacted on now everyone they come across. But it's, I mean, I'm sure just because we've had to condense the story to fit it into a podcast, you don't want to do, you know, 6 or 7 episodes, which a lot of these stories could take if we wanted to tell every part of it. So we're dealing with a very condensed story here. But their switch from like, we are victims of society to we're now beating the shit out of people with blunt objects. The switch seems to have happened really quickly. Do you think maybe there was more of a lead up that we've just not been able to find?
There is a lead up, but it's one of those things that like Black America would understand, where you're being oppressed and you're being subjugated and no one wants to pay you a fair wage. They just want to pay you food and you have to pay to live on their land and all that kind of stuff.
So you think that this was maybe there wasn't a lead up to it. It was just a quick snap.
There was a lead up. It was just a lifetime coming.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. When you put it in that context, that makes sense. Again, before everyone gets on our case, we're not condoning murderers. Regardless of how shitty your life is, you don't get to do that to
murder people. Will only make it worse.
Yeah. There's no justified murder. Simple as that. Unless you're shooting a pedophile in the testicles.
That might not be murder. Depends on if he dies. Alexander McKay wasn't actually a random hit. Months before, Jimmy had laid out a list of grievances and the people he would seek vengeance on if he could. McKay told of Jimmy when he stole food from the man's house while on the run for horse theft in 1893.
So quite obviously.
7 years he's held that fucking grudge.
Yeah. And that also points to what has now happened, where you had this complete switch. And, you know, these people are now violent retribution killers. And it almost seems to me like it doesn't have to be that much of a slight for him to be like, you're my next target.
I'm already going to be hung for murder. I might as well right every wrong I can think of.
Or he's trying to justify his bloodlust in his own mind as well, which is probably happening a little bit.
I mean, I'd go with number one just for me if it was me. Oh, well, in for a penny, in for a pound, I'm going to hang either way. Let's sort this shit out.
We obviously... predictions on how Holly's life will end. She becomes Blaze a crazy glory. Radical activist.
Near the junction of the roads to Wallar and Cassilis, the brothers spoke to 2 Indian hawkers and asked for ammunition. The hawkers told the brothers that they would leave the ammunition at a location near Wallar. That night, the Governor brothers went to Harry Neville's Crowy Run for their next vengeance, but Neville had already left, having suspected he might receive a visit.
That's not bad. Like, they obviously had a pretty sus feeling, but that did mean that they lost their money, though, didn't they?
They hadn't paid for it yet.
Right.
They were going to do a swap money for ammo.
Okay, so at that point you're like, these people trust me way too much. I am definitely being set up into a trap here.
The Hawkers have no relation to Neville at all. It's just that Neville saw the trail of destruction heading for his house and went, you know what, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Yeah, makes sense.
The governors did not retrieve the ammo, suspecting that it was a trap. Instead, they travelled east to the home of Michael O'Brien, which is smart for them because it was actually a trap.
Michael O'Brien here, happiest little Irishman that you've ever seen. My name is O'Brien.
I don't know. What do Irish people do?
Considering my grandmother's maiden name, these might be my relatives. I don't know yet. It's one of those things I'll have to have a look into.
Depends. Were they, did they glow in the dark? If they did, then they were probably your relatives.
No, not that side, the other side.
Oh, okay. Not the white, pasty side.
No, the other side.
Not that you're pasty, but you're definitely white. You're very,
I'm
very
a redhead.
Bright.
We glow in the dark, okay?
It's wake up sometimes, look over in the bed next to me and think that an alien has just popped in there.
Unfortunate image.
So glowy. It's like a goddamn nightlight in our bedroom. Once sorry.
I'm just going to walk away from this. Once at Michael O'Brien's house, they shot a heavily pregnant Elizabeth O'Brien and Catherine Bennett. Joe hit Mrs. O'Brien with the tomahawk, finally killing her. The motive for this one was a long-forgotten cricket match where Michael O'Brien forced Jiving Governor to shut up by dunking him in the creek.
Yeah, again, see what I mean? Like, it's definitely, we've gone past violent snap to premeditated
murder. Gotta get him.
It's just like the gasket is blown and it's like we're off to the races. So we're going from target to target to target to target. And it's definitely, which takes you from victim to murderer in
well
my
and
opinion.
Truly.
Yeah. Because again, once you've got premeditation there, it's no longer a crime of passion. And I hate that term. Crime of passion really drives me nuts. He murdered his whole family and his wife in a crime of passion.
That's not passion. That's hatred.
It's not, but yeah, passion. You know, she rebuffed him, so he murdered her, or she rebuffed him, so she murdered him. You know, it's like, there's no passion there. It's just blind rage.
By July 25th, 200 pounds was offered for the capture of the boys, listing all of their murders to date. I did not go and write down all those murders because we've covered them all, so don't go looking for that. On Thursday, July 26th, the Governor brothers broke into an empty house belonging to Thomas Hughes, stealing a Winchester rifle and ammunition. Do you think it's the one that repels ghosts from Supernatural? I'm just asking.
So the Winchester rifle is named as such because that comes from the Winchester family, which is quite a substantial gun manufacturing family in America. Now, I will give you this, Holly. Mrs. Winchester went fucking crazy in her later years and built one of the most craziest mazes of a house because she felt that the house was haunted. So she tried to make it as hard for the ghosts to get around as possible. So in a very long way, you're kind of right. Very roundabout way.
I don't care. I win. Now in the vicinity of Walla, the boys headed to Kieran Fitzpatrick's farm. Jimmy believed Fitzpatrick had poisoned his dog gears beforehand, so this was another score to settle.
Wow, so has anyone else wronged us? Well, I'm pretty sure this dude killed my dog. Now, did he kill your dog or did your dog die because this is Australia and life is tough and there are venomous snakes everywhere? Well, do you want to stop killing or keep killing? Keep killing.
Then
he poisoned my dog. Fucking hell. Like now the excuses are getting pretty thin on the ground. It went from he pushed me into the creek once to this dude may or may not have killed my dog. Maybe, possibly. I'm not sure.
Or it might have been a snake. I don't know. Unfortunately, they killed Fitzpatrick, calling him out while his nephew wasn't home and shooting the man in the shoulder, then hitting him with a tomahawk.
Did you kill my dog? No, I said bang. You didn't even let him answer. I don't think we really need to worry about excuses anymore, man.
The governors remained hidden in the bush, occasionally stumbled upon but able to flee. More than 2,000 armed civilians and 200 police officers were on the route to track
them. That's a lot of police presence.
That's more than what responded to the Bathurst Rebellion.
Really?
Yes, it is. So I looked up the numbers.
So an entire army of bushrangers was not...
80 bushrangers was not worth what taking after two was.
And I wonder why there was more police presence sent after these men than anyone else.
I don't know. Maybe it's something to do with their skin. I don't know.
Yeah, it's always interesting to look at those things historically to see there is always that over-proportional response. And at least in this era, like there shouldn't be an over-proportional response in modern society. But back in that era, they were constantly worried about uprisings. You know, they're like, we're repressing these people. We want to treat them as second-class citizens. We certainly don't want them standing up. So if you have two who are rebelling, you're going to send everything and anything you can to stop them before, you know, they cause further uprisings everywhere else. You know, we saw that when the freedom fight, like we've covered a lot of freedom fighters now on this show. Not that these guys are. These guys are bushranging murderers. But it's like any time you saw an uprising, it's like, we will deploy the army. We will deploy the constables. We will deploy the army that uses constables as shields because that's how badass they are.
And then we'll get the citizens involved to help us.
And we'll give them all pointy hats.
No, those were the Germans, not the Australians.
Didn't the British have some pointy hats at one stage? They have fluffy hats.
We're going to
put a fluffy hat on everyone. See that gun over there? Yes, sir. Needs a fluffy hat on it right now. Quick smart. Put a fluffy hat on it.
Just got this image of this rifle in my brain with this tiny little fluffy hat on top of the hammer.
Yep.
That's unfortunate. On September 25, 1900, the reward was up to £1,000 each. The governors were proclaimed outlaws on the 23rd of October 1900, allowing the shoot-to-sight order to be implemented. This is the same order that allowed them to blast the shit out of Ned Kelly. On October 17, in the confusion of being fired upon as they travelled down a creek, the brothers split in different directions and became separated. Jimmy Governor was wounded during an attempted ambush on October 13 and was no longer able to eat due to the damage to his mouth.
Oh, so he
got shot in the face.
So, oh, shit.
1900, bush law. At least he's a native Australian, so he should know enough bush law to prevent infection, but who knows
when he's on the run. It doesn't really matter when you can't, like, I mean, you know what this dude looked like. His fucking lower jaw was hanging off. He was probably like looking like half a skull underneath there.
I didn't actually, well, there's no way they would have taken a photo of his face, okay?
Well, photos weren't.
No. Well, they were, because Ned Kelly had one.
But so not as, you know, you're
they
not
wouldn't have, as, quote, wasted it on a black guy, okay? But
you don't
the
think
descriptions.
There wasn't a couple of, like, early metalheads being like, come on, man, we got to do this, take a photo, and we're going to publish it in Fangoria. Or their equivalent, which would have been, like, the 18th century gentleman's expose into face mutilation. I don't know, something fancy. But that's fucked. He's a zombie-looking thing now.
The description that I found said that the bullet hit his right side, shattered all the teeth on that side, and then cracked his jaw.
So think Jonah Hex from DC Comics.
Almost, yeah. Yeah. But with no teeth because the bullet just went straight in on an angle and then came out his front teeth.
That would have been fucking horrific to have seen.
And it would have been incredibly fucking painful. You've had a... root canal, you know how many nerves are in your teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
So imagine all of those being busted at the same time.
Got punched in my face once too.
Yeah, that's totally comparable to being shot in the face with a musket ball.
No, I'm saying that'd be worse. And musket balls were big and they were gooey because they were lead. So yeah, that's kind of, we're now into.
Well, at this point, they might be a lead ball. I don't know.
We've now evolved into super villainy because if he does survive, he's going to be one of those weird villains with a disfigurement.
Why do you talk funny? Because someone shot me in the face. He became too weak to keep going, and by his own words, for 2 weeks he actually consumed nothing but honey and water. At least honey is antibacterial.
It is antibacterial, lots of glucose. It's going to keep you running. It's better than eating people.
Yeah, we're looking at you, Pierce. On October 27, Postmaster John Wallace of Bobbin was camping near Bobbin Creek. He went off to visit a neighbour, and when he came back to camp, he realised he'd been burgled. His billy and tucker bag were gone. Suspicious and knowing that the governors were in the area, he set up a trap for the guilty party and waited. he lay on the opposite side of the creek and watched his camp. At dusk, his patience was rewarded.
At dusk, I saw Darkie come walking leisurely along to the fire. I waited 15 or 20 minutes, and he gave evidence that he intended to make the fire his camping place for the night, and then went home and got my horse to get a party together to surround the outlaw before morning.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Because I had to twirl my glorious moustache.
I assume you had a moustache.
And it took 3 minutes to reload my gun, so better to have more guns in the vicinity.
You can actually have a chat while you're killing each other. How's the weather? Really, really... Oh, fucking Jesus, can't get this musket to work. Anyway, how are the kids? Oh, really good. Boom!
I'd like to point
shit,
out.
I missed. All right, back to it. What are you doing for Christmas? Oh, I don't know, maybe get some Christmas pudding. Mmm, some delicious Christmas pud. That sounds really, really nice.
I'd like to point out, Matthew is miming...
Oh, dear, actually.
Yeah, Matthew is miming, filling a musket and then, like, compressing the powder, except he's only doing it with one hand. It's a bit wanky.
I've got my notes in the other hand.
I just thought it was funny. The men were in position by 3 a.m., but waited for dawn to make their move. Just on dawn, Jimmy stood up 20 yards from one of the men and startled the lot of them. Green called out for Jimmy to surrender, and Jimmy did what was logical. He grabbed his gun and hot-footed it up the creek. Green and Wallace chased him, shooting as they ran. Green shot Jimmy in the thigh, dropping him after a 200-yard chase.
After a time, Jimmy began to move. He got up, leaned upon his elbows, looked at us for a moment, and suddenly said, "I give you fellows credit for catching me. The police could not run down a potty calf."
I'd like to point out that the newspaper I quoted that off censored that. I'm pretty sure it's the fucking police.
We always assume the worst every time we see
censorship. I mean, it's Australia. Yeah, we use, like, that word in every part of every sentence.
You see censorship in old-timey newspapers where you know something has definitely happened, and it's usually, you know, fuck, shit, cunt.
All I don't the think other it would, words. I don't think it would be cunt, but goddamn generally gets censored in a different way, so yeah, it's not true, goddamn too. In this yep. way.
Because that's blasphemy. Yes. It's blasphemous.
On October 30, Jimmy was brought before the police magistrate and charged with the murder of Ellen Kurtz. Evidence was more to do with identifying the prisoner than proving he actually committed the crimes. I did realise, and when I was... I haven't written this in the notes. But when they were talking about identifying him, one of the prosecutor's arguments was, see him? He's an outlaw. That means he did it. That was his entire argument.
You, sir, are the best goddamn prosecutor I have ever met. Your argument is brilliant. And look, quite honestly, like, you should be taking my judge's wig and gavel right now. In fact, here it is. I present it to you. The best prosecutor I have ever met. Good day. I will retire now, as I will never, ever see another lawyer present an argument that well ever again, and so it would be merely humouring them to sit before another court. Thank you very much. And then he just walks off.
How lazy do you have to be to go, well, the government said he's an outlaw because he did it, so he must have done it.
Yeah, it's the must and the done it clause.
We've already proved it once. We don't have to do it again.
And you often see that in a lot of true crime cases where you know, people narrow in on a suspect. They're like, it's absolutely this guy. It's absolutely him. And then actual suspects sort of get lost amongst the, you know, the raids because people aren't really paying attention to who they should be.
So there you go. If you want to succeed in true crime, make sure you have someone really convincing to frame it upon.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Free advice. Care of us.
Well, I mean, look at someone like John Wayne Gacy, for example. Nothing ever stuck to him because he presented himself as like, I'm a pillar of the community. I'm a contractor. I'm a local businessman. I participate in local politics. I dress as a clown and go and visit sick kids in the hospital. It can't possibly be me. Of course, it was absolutely him. You know, it's hiding in plain sight.
Even in Australia, look at Leonard Warrick. The police knew it was him. They just couldn't prove it because he was so good at hiding it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Joe Governor, however, spent October 30 unknowing of his brother's capture. He lit a fire in a gully and settled down to sleep, thinking himself hidden from those who lived nearby. Unfortunately, one of the men nearby, returning from visiting a neighbour, spotted the smoke.
Joe Wilkinson and his brother at 5 a.m. came upon John Governor when he was asleep. They called upon him to surrender, and he jumped up at hearing them and ran. Wilkinson fired, and Governor fired back.
Wilkinson chased Governor through the bush, Governor slowly getting away. When he was 120...
Marco.
And then three Polo. People go, Polo, wait, why are the trees talking now?
No, we're not after you, Ned. Fuck off. All right, take your helmet off and piss off. Okay.
He's already dead for 12 years.
And get back into your grave, Kelly. We already hung you. We don't need to deal with the zombie, Kelly. This is ridiculous.
Actually, that's something someone needs to do.
Zombie Kelly.
Yeah.
I've actually seen a comic book series where it was Ned Kelly's far-flung future descendant fighting off aliens.
That's weird. I like not Zombie
really.
Kelly better.
Not really, if you think about like how some people see Ned Kelly as a folk hero standing up to the police. So substitute police with space aliens and Kelly with Kelly's far-flung future grandson.
Some people really need to face the true lines of history.
Never let the truth get in the way of a good yarn, Holly.
When Governor was 120 yards distant, Wilkinson stopped, dropped to one knee, aimed, and fired. Joe Governor collapsed into the creek, dead.
And that's it for Jack. That's it. It just ends there.
That's the end of Joe Governor, yeah.
Yeah, he, you know, what more can you say? He decided to turn to a life of violence. Violent ends bring... What do they say?
Delights bring violent ends.
That's the one. Absolutely. And that's exactly what happened to him. He started to really dig on it, and he dug on revenge. He dug on murder and people. And in the end, he was murdered himself. Because you got to remember, this is the era of the Wild West of Australia. This is the outback. This is, you know, our very earliest days, which means the law and killing someone was not held in the same regard that it is today. It's really survival of the fittest. And if someone is constantly murdering you, you're going to shoot them.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I agree. Jack Underwood was executed by Robert Howard in Dubbo Jail on the 14th of January, 1901. Howard then travelled to Sydney, where he executed Jimmy Governor on the 18th of January, 1901. That dude's got a full-time schedule.
Yes, he is. He's just... Because, I mean, that's a long bit of travelling by horse, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, nowadays it's like 8 hours.
Yeah. So it'd be weeks.
Two, three. Actually, those 4 days is probably him just traveling between one to the other.
Probably stopped at Junee.
Newcastle on the way down.
Because the train's definitely not built at this point, is it?
No. Right. 1865. Actually, yeah, it probably is. But or not he was on the train or whether he would have taken his horse and sulky, yeah. Don't know. Ethel ended up visiting her husband in prison before he was executed and gave birth to a girl in April 1901. Nice of them to offer conjugal visits.
Do you think that's what happened?
Either that or she was sleeping with someone else at the same time. In November 1901, she became infamous once again when she married a part Aboriginal man and the press went nuts. Not because a possible murderess was remarrying, but because of who she married.
Fuck's sake. You just can't win, can you?
No. And I've actually got a quote here of the vitriol if Matthew feels like poisoning himself to read it.
Mrs. James Governor and her infant child disappeared altogether for a time, and then there were statements made to the effect that they were the inmates of some home, and that Mrs. Jimmy was undergoing the reforming process. However, we now hear from a correspondent on the South Coast. Yeah, correspondent. You mean Mavel?
Mavel on the street corner.
Yeah, who's always walking around with a fucking notepad poking over people's fences and shit. Oh, I see your lawn is a little bit longer than everyone else's lawn. Do you not think that we should all stand up to the same standards to keep our entire street looking beautiful? For, you know, if it's not just one of us holding up the standards, you know, everyone will drop the standards and then the standards will drop. Fuck off, Mavel. You all know a Mavel. We all know one. Although I suppose a Karen would be a better name now for it.
Yeah, or a homeowners association, the person who runs that because they have nothing else in their life.
Yeah, met a couple of those in my time. However, we now hear from a correspondent on the South Coast that the unfortunate wife of Australia's champion murderer has just been married. The second marriage is just as repulsive as the first, for the bridegroom is a half-caste, and in spite of all her faults, the woman is white. That the institution of marriage should be for such degrading and soul-destroying unions is disgraceful. However, the inevitable consequence will be the completion of the damnation of her soul, in addition to the piebald of a white Australia. Was that
you, Mabel.
Was that pretentious enough for you, Holly? Was that racist? Was that dripping with prejudice?
I mean, when I hear it, I just imagine like this really old white woman who's got like that really high posh voice going, ew, the half caste has married the white woman, ew.
Run away, run away. We don't want the races mixing.
How big of a cunt do you have to be, though?
Yeah. Well, you can tell I've also watched a lot of Monty Python because that voice is definitely in. That's like,
Michael Palin.
Oh, what do you think of me now? Oh, I'm not as fancy as all the other ladies.
That's Mabel. That's his Mabel voice.
There we go. New character is born. Pretty much ripped off of Monty Python, though.
Most things are. It's fine.
Yeah, it's just a continuation. That's all it is.
Ethel and Frank Brown eventually ended up to go on and have 11 children. Ethel died.
Well, they were a young married couple. And
I think she was 25.
Oh, she was an old matron by that stage, by those standards.
An old maid.
Old maid. Well, look, they like to have sex at least once every 11 years. Once a year for at least 11 years.
Dude was getting it on.
He was.
Ethel died October 1945 and was buried in Rookwood Cemetery. So this lady lasted long enough to almost see the end of World War II.
That's not a bad effort. It's not a bad effort to go from, you know, Australia's Wild West, to go from the era of the Bushranger into essentially the Industrial Age and then see not World only War one, I. but two World Wars.
The Great Depression in the middle of it.
Yeah, like this. This woman copped everything. She copped the racism and the prejudices of the day, saw the world's greatest conflicts, saw the bush rangers. I mean, like, fuck. Like, it's kind of funny when you think about the start of the... Well, it's not funny. I mean, funny in a strange
way. Funny, weird, not funny, haha.
That when you look at the start of this story, it's about this young woman who, you know, definitely overlooks the racial prejudices of the time twice.
Mm-hmm.
But sees probably some of the greatest change that the world has ever seen until the digital era, you know.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Like 60 years after her. Like, mm-hmm. That's just absolutely insane to me that someone can say that much. But I suppose also, if we think about it in context of our era now, it's like we saw the worst bushfires that Australia has ever seen, and then we had year one of the pandemic followed by year two of the pandemic following probably more year three of the pandemic.
Shh, I don't want to hear that.
So it is interesting to see that, you know, I guess sometimes major events can be like really condensed because we're also in the middle of Cold War part two.
Yeah. It's one thing that I try to explain to people is that history isn't specific concrete blocks.
Yep.
Stuff will bleed into other stuff, and it's not until you actually sit down and create a timeline like I almost finished doing yesterday that you realize how much stuff overlaps and how many eras are just influencing each other. And man, I feel like I sound like I'm high.
Well, yeah. See, the problem is the other day,
it's all groovy, man.
I looked into Holly's office and she's got cork boards everywhere. And she's like, don't you understand? It's all connected. And I'm like, that's probably the case. How about we have a cup of tea? And
you maybe just come out here, come out of the darkness, and honey.
Let's paint some board game miniatures together. How about that, honey? You don't understand. Board game miniatures and a cup of tea. That sounds lovely. No, she's not crazy. She's not that crazy. She's pretty crazy. But that does wrap up this story of two very murderous bushrangers. There's really no nice angle to spin on this one. Sometimes we can, but just like the cannibal bushrangers, the Governor brothers were true outlaws. They were true bushrangers and they were truly deadly for the people of their time.
Not just the Governor brothers, the Governor clan, because you had the nephew, you had the wife, you had the two brothers. It's not just... They were the ones convicted, but there was more than them.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows what these people would have got up to should they have got more organized? Who knows? Well, that's it for the part two and the conclusion to this story. But before you leave, it's time to do another Patreon shout out.
Yeah.
So with our Patreon, we're trying to do this a bit more often, but we every now and again would like to acknowledge, of course, our Patreon supporters. And we do that by listing out the various names of the people who are supporting us, and we give them a big thank you. So, Holly, read the list.
Well, it's for privacy, I'll give you a first name and then the first initial. Names.
Yes.
So, Robert H.
Oh, thank you very much, Robert.
Alex M.
Alex, you're wonderful. You know who you are.
Ben E.
Benny, my buddy. Thank you so much.
Lachlan K.
Lachlan K, as in okay. The man is okay by me.
Kiri Costi.
We should have a cup of tea together to say thank you. I'm trying. This is not as easy as you'd think it is.
Jane T.
Jane T. Insert as above. Just pop that
He's
comment
run out
down.
Of ideas. We're only on number six. Jamie Lee H.
Jamie Lee H. How you doing? Doing well because you're supporting us and we thank you.
And you talk a lot on the Facebook page, so thank you for that.
Yes. It's always nice to see those comments.
Ian N.
Ian N.
CNN.
Of good news. Thank you very much.
Donna Z.
Donna Z. Cool name. Space age. I love it. Futuristic. The Adventures of Donna Z. Thank you for supporting us.
Adam S.
Adam S. S, man after my own heart. Adam S for superhero because he's a Patreon supporter.
Sue F, who is also very, very active on the Facebook page.
Sue F is a great lady, has always supported us. So from the bottom of our hearts, thank you.
Kylie S.
Kylie S, thank you so much. I've run out of themed names. I'm sorry.
Cephathes. I think that's how you say it.
Cephathes, if that is your gamer tag, then I salute you. Thank you for supporting us.
KCB.
KCB in the house. KCB is the name of the woman at the second episode of the season, the final season of The Office. KCB. Thank you so much, KCB. I'm going to stop ranting now.
A good old mate, Pat C.
Pat C. I know Pat very well. I was actually talking to Pat not too long ago, so big shout out to you, Pat. Thank you for supporting us.
Sally A.
Sally A. Sally has been a longtime supporter and is unfortunately stuck in Tumut, or fortunately, depending on your perspective. But thank you very much, Sally.
She is the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth longest supporter. We're getting older as we go down. Dr. David W.
Hey, Dr. David W. of course, check out his book.
Tales from Rat City. I think that's
No, that was the podcast.
That was the podcast.
But you if you type that in, you'll be able to find Dr. David. He's still supporting us. It's been years. Thank you so much, David.
Millie L.
Millie L, how you doing? Hopefully you're doing well, Millie L.
Our second longest supporter, Mary A.
Mary A, the princess of crime of pop. The pop princess of crime.
There you go.
I got it out there in the end. I just needed a minute to improvise something.
And our longest running supporter, a very, very, very big thank you to Vanessa P.
Thank you so much, Vanessa, for hanging on, for supporting us for such a long time.
She has been supporting us since June 2019.
My goodness. I hope.
2 and a bit years.
I hope we've been worth it. That's all I have really to say.
I really do too.
Well, big thank you, of course, to all of our Patreon supporters for this. Researched materials get used like
frequently.
Frequently on the show, and they are brought by Patreon dollars. The equipment we use is bought by Patreon dollars. Storing the podcast itself is purchased with Patreon dollars. So
not this episode, though, because this episode was actually my grandfather gave me a book and this was in this one.
Yes. another type of support. But yes, we'd like to thank everyone for supporting us and, you know, you help make the podcast bigger and better. So big thank you. Now, if you would like to be thanked on a future episode, don't forget you can also subscribe to Patreon. Type in weirdcrapinaustralia.com. And that's going to redirect straightly to our Patreon site.
That's so much easier to remember.
Weirdcrapinaustralia.com. Head straight to our Patreon. If you become a Patreon supporter for $5 a month, you get the mainline episodes completely ad-free, a bonus mini-sode, and the audiobook chapters from our upcoming audiobook, Weird Crap in Australia, Volume 1. You're going to get the work print early, which means every week you're going to get a new chapter of the audiobook. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we have you covered for the monthly price of $5 a month, as well as polls, thank you podcasts, and of course, blogging as well. So all of that is available on weirdcrapinaustralia.com.
The polls are going to go up, I've decided, the last week of each month.
Yep.
So they'll decide the last one, but it'll be like 3 or 4 episodes before I actually record the one, or you listen to the one that we recorded as a result.
Yeah, if you're a Patreon supporter, you will actually be influencing which episode we do next if you choose to use that option. $5 a month. Thank you so much for your support. Now, moving on, if you would like to grab yourself a Weird Crap in Australia t-shirt, head to our Redbubble store, weirdcrapinaus.redbubble.com. That's weirdcrapinaus.redbubble.com. And you can get one of Ignacio's amazing Weird Crap in Australia designs slapped on a t-shirt, a coaster, your pants, hats, beanies, masks. They do pants. Mm. But I don't think I've set up many for pants. I'm not sure. Some of our designs don't quite work on pants.
That doesn't surprise me.
But you can get our designs on a ton of stuff. Redbubble offers an enormous amount of products that you can personalize with Ignacio's designs. So get on that. Patreon. Buy our books. Books. We wrote books. We wrote books for your friends and family who don't care for podcasts. We wrote them for you as well to have a companion to the podcast. Weird Crap in Australia Volume 1 and now Weird Crap in Australia Volume 2 are available from lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. It's our print-on-demand service. We also have them digitally on amazon.com and Kindle. And if you'd like to place an order with a brick-and-mortar store, our current partner is Impact Comics, where you can find them at impactcomics.com.au to shoot them an email and they will order a book for you. We are getting stock to their store very shortly. We're just waiting on delivery.
Yes, which should be here soon. I'm just looking it up.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Ignacio has not got his copies either yet. So everyone is just waiting. Everyone's waiting for postage. Of course, this is week 5, 3, 4. Surely it's been a month.
Give me a sec, I'll look it up.
Of course, today I got sent home for another test. So, you know, this is the life we're living.
2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks.
Of the lockdown?
Oh, no, book order.
Oh, good God. Like, I was freaking out there. I was like, have I really been?
No, week 4 of the lockdown in Canberra in week 14, 15 in
month New like Zealand, six in Melbourne.
New South Wales.
You know, it's been crazy.
Maybe week 3 in New Zealand. I don't know. I don't listen to New Zealand.
Either way, we're going to get out of this at some stage.
There is a way out. We just have to find it.
Now, don't forget, if you want to keep the conversation going, head to our social media. You can find us on Facebook. We are Weird Crap in Australia. Instagram, Weird Crap in Australia. And on Twitter, we are at Weird Crap in Oz. Every couple of days, I've been doing Facebook live streams while I paint some minis. A couple of you guys have been joining me on that. I do plan on doing these a couple of times a week. Most probably Mondays and Tuesdays. I will try and get a bit of a better schedule going, but at the moment they appear to be two late night shows, one around 10:30 a.m. on a p.m. Eastern Standard Time on a Tuesday, and the other is popping up around 1 p.m. on a Tuesday morning as well, I guess.
1 a.m.
Sorry.
Not p.m. PM is afternoon.
1 a.m. But we'll post as we solidify those plans a bit more. But I have been enjoying doing it. So if you'd like to jump in on one of those live streams, don't forget to like our Facebook page.
We will alert on the Facebook page when we're going live or try and give you a rough estimation because we're not really that punctual. We might be tired. It might not be a thing to last until 3 a.m. So
absolutely. So we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the Weird Crap in Australia podcast. And as customary, Holly has the final words.
You know what I want? I want a set of pajamas with the Weird Crap logo on it. You know how you get pants and they have like faces and stuff? Just like with the Weird Crap logo.
I'm sure.
Just like a shirt.
I might be able to see what I can do. I'll have a look.
I want them in flannelettes. So well, you
have
pants.
Access to our Redbubble.
But that's your thing.
I
do the researchy and the spreakery and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes the Facebookery.
Facebookery. Sounds dirty. On that note, I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of the podcast, and we will see you soon for more Weird Crap in Australia. Bye for now.
See you later.
The Weird Crap in Australia podcast is hosted and produced by Holly and Matthew Soule. Our editor is Blake Kell. Weird Crap in Australia is a production of The Modern Meltdown.